Okay, in so if you followed last week and this week, even though you weren't here last week, in most synagogues they still read. they didn't respect the Matan schedule. Right, so there was this terrible shift in the Torah going from narrative to law to construction. So, and the construction itself is very interesting. Not that the construction is interesting, it's not interesting, but the fact that it's talking about construction is interesting, because for us, what that does is it draws a parallel between the other times that we have construction in the Torah. So, for example, in the very beginning of Bereshit, you have God creating a world. That's construction. Right afterwards, when the world doesn't work out that well, you have Noach building a teva and the building
the Tower of Babel.
The Tower of Babel. Correct. When I spoke on Friday night in Shul, I mentioned that one as well. But what's interesting there is that you have God's construction, right? The world not working out that well. Then you have Noach's construction. And then you have, without instruction, people building on their own. Over here also you have the Mishkan, which is instructed, and then the people on their own building the Egel. But of course, what the chronology is something which absolutely doesn't concern us today. So, at least we're not going to bring it up now. But in the middle of all of these instructions about building the Mishkan, what we find is, in the beginning, the first source that we have here, Perek Kaf Chet, Va'ata hakrev elecha et Aharon achicha, ve'et banav ito mitoch b'nei Yisrael lecha hanoli, Aharon nadav aviyu elazar v'itamar b'nei Aharon. And what we have is the selection of Aharon and his children as Kohanim. And the truth is that we're not given any particular reason at this point as to why this selection is made. In the Haftorah, which by the way, writes generally about Yecheskel coming from the perspective of Galut, talking about the Beit HaMikdash, which no longer exists, giving visual images of the Beit HaMikdash, which he's seeing from afar, both chronologically and geographically. And then, in the middle of the talking about the building of the Mishkan or the instructions of of the Beit HaMikdash, he says, "V'natata el kohanim halevim, Hashem hemi zeret tzadok akrovim elai, no'um Hashem, Hashem Elokim, l'sharitenu par ben bakar l'chatat." So he talks about not only, again, a choice of kohanim who will serve, but he talks about a very specific family of kohanim, tzadok. And there is definitely room to speak about Tzadok and who is Tzadok and why his children, why Tzadok would be selected, who later on are the Tzadokim and what connection may exist between the Tzadokim and this particular Tzadok. But there's just a different turn of phrase that I want to note. It says, "V'natata el ha-kohanim ha-leviim," where the Kohanim are considered to be both Kohanim and Leviim. Now, of course, you can come back and tell me, well, why should that be surprising at all? The vast majority of Kohanim are also Leviim, correct? The vast majority, correct. All Kohanim are obviously from Shevet Levi as well, because Aaron is one family within Shevet Levi. So of course, there is this association. And perhaps if we were interested now in Halakha, we can also talk about to what extent is a Kohen considered to be a Levi, and to what extent a Kohen is a separate identity. But despite those observations, that one, it's true genealogically, and two, there may be another association, despite all that, you'd be very hard-pressed to find any other place in Tanakh, other than the book of Yecheskel, and this is not the only place, where Kohanim are called Leviim. Because generally there's two different things, there's Kohen and Levi. And I just want to stretch the question a little bit, or the problem a little bit. To what extent is the selection of Levi connected to the selection of the Kohen? Or to what extent is the selection of the Kohen connected to Levi? Which means, again, for us, it's clear, it's there's no question, there's no debate, that Aharon is from Shevet Levi. Correct? Aharon is a Kohen. Aharon's descendants will be Kohanim. But just like Aharon is from Levi, is that an intrinsic relationship? Or is that just it happened to work out that way? Which means, could the Leviim had been the Shevet Dan? And then we were talking about the Danim and not the Leviim. And Aharon comes from a different tribe, which means, are these things absolutely related with one another, or are these things independent? So over here, in Yechezkel, he does call him HaKohanim HaLeviim. So is there some kind of an intrinsic relationship, or is that just he's making an observation? And if he is making an observation, then why is he the first one to make this observation, and why isn't this the normal way that they are described? Now, in Shemot Perek Kavchet, which means in this week's parasha, we are not given the reason for the selection of Aharon. Right? And by the way, we're also not given any reason for any selection of Leviim, and we're not even told anything about a selection of Leviim. Which means the Leviim being selected is something we don't know about. Later on, we'll find about Levi as well. If you look in Sefer Bamidbar, for example, in source 3, Ve'ela todot Aharon u'Moshe b'yom diber Hashem et Moshe b'har Sinai. Ve'ela shmot, which by the way is a very strange introduction. Ve'ela shmot b'nei Aharon ha'bachor Nadav v'Avihu Elazar v'Itamar. Which by the way, you can also almost be fooled by the way it's written, and people have pointed it out, where it almost sounds like it says Ve'ela shmot b'nei Aharon ha'bachor Nadav v'Avihu. But of course, is Aharon really the bachor? Well, he has an older sister, so. But I'm saying it is written also in a very...
It also sounds funny that when he says the Bechor, it's Nadav and Avihu together.
Right. Which is why it sounds more the other way. Aharon HaBechor, but Aharon's not a Bechor. Unless you just count because he's the first son. We're told about the demise of Nadav Avihu, then Pasuk Vav, it says, HaKrev et Matei Levi, which by the way is very similar to the phrase that we had in this week's parasha, where it was Vata HaKrev Elecha et Aharon. Here it's HaKrev et Matei Levi, Vamadata Oto Lefnei Aharon HaKohen, Vishertu Oto. Which is interesting because over here what we're told is that the purpose of the Levi is to serve Aharon. And it continues, it says, Vishamru et Mishmarto, and then we're told further that they're the ones who will take care of all kinds of things. Look at Pasuk Tet if you want more problems. So what's the double Nitunim is also a little strange. They're given. But we see over here that they have a job of sherut. Sherut is work, lesharet, and they also have a job of shmirah, v'shamru, of guarding. So there's a dual job over here as well. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, v'ani hine lakachti et haleviim mitoch b'nei Yisrael, tachat kol b'chor peter rechem b'nei Yisrael v'hayu li haleviim. So now just to complicate this a little bit more, we're told that the selection of the Leviim is there as a replacement of the selection of the firstborn. Which of course leads you with one problem, and what's that? Maybe two problems.
Why?
One is why, and what else? Even better than that. Even better than why. Better than why. Why the firstborn selected? Which means that there's a two-pronged problem over here. Yeah, and well, what's the reason? Okay, I didn't read that yet. Right? I didn't read that yet. I'm just, correct. That one is that the selection of Levim is instead of the firstborn. Why is this? And why the firstborn selected? And then we're told, Kili kol b'chor b'yom hakoti kol b'chor b'eretz Mitzrayim hikdashti li kol b'chor b'Yisrael me'adam ad be'ma Li'iyu ani Hashem. So God says, because I selected them on the day that I wiped out the firstborn. Now that is now that's not clear at all as to okay. We're told a fact that the Bechor was chosen. Why? Because there was Makat Bechorot. Okay. But what exactly is that correlation? Is it that the firstborn of the Jews should have died as well? And therefore there's this concept that since they should have died, now that their lives are being given back to them as a present, they have to in turn give their lives to God. Which of course the strange thing about that would be...
All of Bnei Israel would say.
Okay, one all of Bnei Israel would say, but what else? That logic would only seem to limit you to that particular generation. It's very hard then to convince me why this should apply to future firstborns, which of course we are told, that future firstborns throughout the generations. If you're talking about this idea, you know, you have this in literature, in television as well, where if somebody saves somebody else's life, so then in a certain sense, you know, I you know, certainly they claim that these things exist in, yeah. There seems to be something still which we're missing, because I accept your comparison, but the comparison between a custom, which is a local custom, which versus a law which is written in the Torah, it's again, I accept the point, but nonetheless, to identify that the firstborn were saved, when you can make an argument that all the Jews were saved. The firstborn were saved, but that's what I'm saying, there seems to be something more than this. Correct. And there's almost an anti-firstborn attitude in terms of all of Sefer Bereishit is anti-firstborn. That's the major theme. I've said this before. If you have to write a book report on Sefer Bereishit, that's the theme, is that the firstborn fails. That's the overwhelming theme of all Sefer Bereishit. in Perek Dalid, in Shemot, when God tells Moshe to go speak to Paro and makes reference to the firstborn,
even
Moshe's not the firstborn. Where God says, where is it? It's Perek Dalet, right? Yes, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Kafbet, Va'amarta El Paro, Ko Amar Hashem, Bini Bechori Yisrael. Right, go tell Paro that Israel's my firstborn. Va'amari Lecha Shalachet Bini, Va'yavdeni, V'tamein Yishlacho, Hine Anochi Hareg Et Bincha Bechorecha. Which means, Israel's my firstborn, which, by the way, now I can make the argument that the saving of the firstborn is really saving of all of Israel, but there is this subtext as far as the significance of the firstborn in terms of Egypt. The reason that the firstborn were generally chosen is that their status in the family was one of respect and one of power. And one thing that we know about the ancient world is what the ancient world respects as power. So within the family unit, the firstborn would generally have the most power. Again, for the most basic reasons, because they're the ones who have power before the younger siblings have power, and they exert that power, and so on. Also Yusha. But I'm saying before you even get there, I'm talking about the ancient world. There is a concept of primogeniture, that there is a concept that the firstborn is the one who rules. Egypt believed in this type of philosophy. And over here, you just have a very interesting contrast, which is being offered up over here. What's the contrast? What does God say? God says, Israel is my firstborn. Now, and if you don't let them go, I will release your firstborn. But when God says that Israel is my firstborn, what does he mean by that? So You just threw in a word that you left out. What was the word? Choice. That God says, I choose these people. There is bichira, which is not the same word as bechor. There is one of selection, that I have chosen the Jewish people as my firstborn. But what it is a very different definition of firstborn, which then God just shifts on when he talks to Paro. Go tell Paro, I'm going to kill your firstborn because you're not releasing my firstborn, but they're not talking about the same firstborn, right? This is the proverbial apples and oranges, because this is Paro's literal firstborn that he's talking about, who is heir to the throne, versus God saying, and these are the people that I've chosen. Now, there is, I think, a very powerful theological statement being made over here. Elaine, what do you want to say?
You just say you don't choose your firstborn.
You choose to get rid of him. Yeah, go ahead.
In other words, that's just who happens to come along first. Not that you look at all your children and, I mean, in other words, like,
so you disagree with God?
No, but it's not, in other words...
But what does God say? That's exactly the point. So what is God saying?
But that's also what Hashem does. Hashem doesn't select Shevet Reuben to be Levi. He doesn't select a family of Reuben. In
words. Right, so, but what is God... But again, what is God saying over here?
It's the same story for all the other... Not first one.
Right. Correct. He's deliberately saying that there is an issue of choice, of selection, and the selection is not based upon an accident of birth. Mm-hmm. It's not based upon the sequence of birth. There's a very different selection going on. But I'm saying, but that's really interesting, because over here, in this debate or this polemic which is supposed to take place between Moshe and Paro, what is the point of it? God is saying to Moshe, tell Paro that Israel is my firstborn, which is an absurdity from Paro's perspective, because who are the Jews as far as he's concerned? They're slaves. They're slaves. They're not chosen. Again, it's okay if I repeat myself, as long as I give proper attribution. In Egypt, Paro was the firstborn of 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 the firstborn. If you want to visualize that, imagine a pyramid. The pyramid is the visual representation of the firstborn of all the firstborns. That's what Paro is. So therefore, his imagined status is based upon destiny, and the destiny is because he is the firstborn of the firstborn of the firstborn of the firstborn. Who are the Jews? They're not firstborn of anybody. They're not the firstborn of the first. They are the complete inverse of what Paro values. And God is coming here using Moshe as his proxy and says, tell Paro that Israel's my firstborn and you better let them go or I will kill your firstborn. Which means that's an affront against the very essence of Paro's sensibilities and his political philosophy, his religious philosophy. And he's being told, listen, where you're born is not so important. What do you mean that's not so important? That's what his whole identity is based on, and that's what his whole power base is based on. And God is telling Moshe, just tell Paro, you know, ignore all that. I've chosen the Jews. There is selection over here. So now, if I have to work this out a little bit more, there seems to be some kind of a process taking place. And I want to just go back a little bit and show you what we're up to. What do we know? We know eventually Aaron and children are chosen as Kohanim. We know that eventually Leviim are chosen as Leviim. We don't know the relationship between Kohanim and Leviim. But now what are we told? We're told that the Leviim take the place of the displaced firstborn who were chosen because they weren't killed. So now, what are we missing over there within this entire process? Apparently, what God has done is he's taken, or if you even want, borrowed from the Egyptian, for lack of a better word, let's say sensibilities, tradition, who should be the one who is most significant, and says, instead of serving the pagan, instead of being used within Egyptian rites, I am going to take the firstborn and they will become instead Kohanim for me. Which means, and by the way, let's also be clear about one thing. Did the firstborn ever serve as Kohanim in befoal, as they say, in practice? Which, when? There's two possibilities, what you're going to say. Who's bar mitzvah pashas? No, I'm kidding. Okay. So there's that's very good, but there's machlok. There it says bechor, or it says kohanim. Right, but it doesn't tell us who we're talking about. Right, so that's a good answer, but you can't prove that that's right. So no, let me ask the question again: is there any time that we that the bechorot or the bechorim were actually used as kohanim? Were they functioned as kohanim? Because over here we're saying, oh, they were displaced. So at which point they were displaced? Why were they displaced? But before I even talk about them being displaced, I want to know, okay, so were they ever used? Were they ever utilized, or was this just like a theoretical thing? They got their official position, but they never got to use the position. Because by the time the Mishkan is built, are we still using, meaning at which point were the Leviim chosen? At which point is Aaron chosen? Right over here, let's go back to this week's parasha. This week's parasha, Aaron's chosen. What's the challenge of this week's parasha? That's the thing that I said I wasn't going to talk about. Namely, the timing and the sequence and the chronology involved of the relationship between the building of the Egel and the relationship between the instruction to build the Mishkan. If we follow things in the proper sequence, that this comes before the Egel. So here we have Aaron being chosen as Kohen prior to any kind of Chet HaEgel. Okay? Which is something which at least I would like you to contemplate for a moment. On the other hand, if it's after the Chet HaEgel, then everything is somewhat easier. What is Rashi saying in source number 4, commenting on Bamidbar, when he says that I've chosen the Levim, Mitoch Bnei Yisrael, Shiyu Yisrael Sochrim Otam L'Sherut. Again, one of the things that we're used, the word here is L'Sherut, they're going to serve, that they will be taken to serve, Shali, Al Yidei HaBecharot Zachiti Bahem, that by virtue of the Becharot, they received like this role generally, U'Lakachtim Tmurotam, and I've taken them as replacements of the Becharot, L'Fisha Haita HaAvodah B'Becharot, because the work was supposed to be with the Becharot, U'Kishachat'u Be'egel Nifsalu V'Halevim Shelo Avdu Avodat Eliyim Nivcharu Tachtehim. Which means that God is saying, I've chosen Leviim as a replacement for the firstborn, because when did the firstborn function as Kohanim? What's the answer? By the Egel. By the Egel, they function as Kohanim. That was their great moment. The great moment was they got to work as Kohanim where? By the Egel. Now that's a real bet. Because what does it say by the Egel? It says they built the Egel, and then it says they brought offerings. So over here, he's asking, so who brought the offerings? He says, here's the Becharot. They've been waiting for their big opportunity. They finally had the opportunity, and they messed up. Can't prove anything. I'll tell you one more thing that you can't prove. Say I gave you a hard time, you come back. I'll tell you one more that you can't prove, and that is what I think is much more likely. Now, I'm going to say more likely than this. I'm just saying serves as the strongest likelihood, and that is that the firstborn served as Kohanim for the Korban Pesach in Egypt. Remember, there was a Korban Pesach in Egypt, and to do the Korban Pesach, you need someone to be doing it. So who would have been doing it? So now, if you go back to the context of where the firstborn is chosen, that's in that same chapter. That's in Perek Yud Bet, Perek Yud Gimel, in Shmot. So here we have this long instruction in terms of, on the one hand, of the whole Passover services and rites and so on. And on the other hand, we're told about the firstborn being chosen. So over here, there it would make the most sense. Even though you can still say, okay, you haven't proved it strong enough, but that would be the meaning that you can argue that the firstborn function at Kohanim in Egypt, right? They function in Egypt. Then they make a real bad collective career move and they function by the Egel. At that point, they're going to be replaced. Although it's interesting, because what does Rashi tell us over here? That the selection of the Leviim is to replace the firstborn, but that doesn't have anything to do with Aaron. Because the Leviim are here to help Aaron, but we're not told over here that Aaron's selection is to replace the firstborn. In fact, we're not given any reason. And by the way, and of course you appreciate the other irony over here, what's that? Aaron also seems to have some kind of a part within the Chet Egel. So over here, the other ones who lose their right, their privileges because of it, and Aaron's the one who becomes the Kohen Gadol. So of course, what information are we lacking? Which we can't possibly resolve this, so just forget about it. What's the sequence? Which means, is Aaron's selection prior to the Chet Egel? And then, why does God allow him to continue when he doesn't allow them? Which of course would force us deeper understanding into different parts and different responsibilities, which means while Aaron makes the Egel, is he the one who's actually doing the korbanot? Is he doing it willingly? Is he doing it because he's forced? Is he doing it for all kinds of other considerations? While it could be that the kavana of the firstborn by bringing the korbanot to the Egel is a much stronger kavana. Again, all these things are much more difficult to answer. And on the other hand, if the sequence is that Aaron was not selected as of yet. Again, either way, if he was selected, why does he keep it? Because the Bechorot lost it. And if he wasn't selected yet, then why should he be selected? And you're pretty much going to be stuck either way. But as I said, what's interesting over here is that according to Rashi, it's not just Rashi. According to the Torah, the Levim are replacing the firstborn. But didn't you think that the firstborn was supposed to be the Kohanim? Right?
Well,
okay, so Rashi brings that also. So let's take a look at that.
Way before that decision was made.
Correct.
Back in the Midbar.
So back in Burning Bush. So we'll come to that. We'll come to that in a second. Just look at the Mizrahi, which is, of course, one of the commentaries on Rashi in source number 5. Ayudeya b'charod zachiti b'hem ulakachtim t'moratam pirish ayudeya b'charod shahayu sheli min hadin. So the way he's explaining Rashi, if you didn't get it, is he's just saying, why is Levi chosen? Yeah. By the way, that's not a real positive choice. Why is Levi chosen? It's what do you really call this? It's out of eliminate process of elimination. Everybody else is eliminated because everyone else worshipped the Egel. The only ones who didn't worship the Egel are Levi, and therefore Levi is chosen, which is not. It's just not as exciting as. What about Aaron? And what about Aaron? And that's still problematic. So you wanted to go back to source 14. Vayichar af Hashem b'Moshe, vayomer halo Aaron achicha ha-Levi, yadati ki teber yidaberhu. So from the context, you now realize that God is displeased with Moshe's constantly begging off. Over here he said that I can't speak and so on, and God says, listen, halo Aaron achicha ha-Levi. So the word ha-Levi seems to be extra. So Rashi writes, where it's underlined in source 15. Omer la Rabbi Yos. So no, I'll read from the beginning. Vayichar af, God got upset. Vayichar af. So the Gemara. So he quotes the Gemara. Rabbi Shua ben Korcha Omer Kol Charon af shebetorah ne'amar bo roshem v'zed lo ne'bar roshem. Anytime it says that God got upset, afterwards it tells us what the punishment was. What roshem? How do you translate roshem? What imprint it left? It leaves some kind of an imprint. V'lo matzib sheba onesh ayidei oto Charon. But we don't find any. We don't find in this particular context any kind of roshem that was left, any kind of imprint that was left, or punishment that was left. Amalo Rabbi Yossi answers, Af bezu nemar bo roshem. Over here as well, there is a roshem which was left. Halo Aaron achicha ha-Levi, shahaya atid liyot Levi, v'lo kohen, v'hakuhuna haita amor letzeit memcha, me'ata lo yekein ela hu ye kohen v'ata ha-Levi. Now, what it said is that it says, Aaron, your brother is a Levi. Right now he's a Levi. He was destined to be a Levi, and you were destined to be the Kohen, but because you begged off, therefore he is going to become the Kohen. Now this is also very interesting, because I can ask the same question all over again. What's that? This is long before the Egel. What happened to the firstborn? Why are the firstborn... Wasn't it Rashi who told us that the firstborn were supposed to have the job until they were displaced? So which job did Rashi say that they were supposed to have? What? But which job did they have as the Bechor according to Rashi? That's not what Rashi said. He said the job of Levi. That Rashi over there was talking about Levi, right? Should we go back and look again, or you don't trust me? In source number 4, right, they're going to take the place of the firstborn, and he writes, You don't like what Rashi writes?
No.
What's Rashi commenting on? Before you argue with me, what's Rashi commenting on?
That they're losing their avodah.
No, wait a second. What's Rashi commenting on? What's the pasuk? What did it say in the pasuk? Pasuk Yud Bed in source 3. That's what the Torah says. One second, before we get all excited with Rashi, what did the Torah say? The Torah says that I've chosen the Levim to take the place of the firstborn. That the Torah says. What does Rashi say? Because the firstborn sinned by the eagle, Levim didn't sin by the eagle. What is the context over here? The context over here is not who will be the Kohen. The context over here is who will be the Levi.
Of the Levi. Of service to God. So either the Bechorot will do the job or the Leviim will do the job.
I'm not gonna argue with you because I would just say it a little differently. That it's possible that there was not supposed to be a distinction. That there was just generic service of God. And who said there's a distinction between Kahuna and Leviya? Right? Which means why would we even suspect that there should be a distinction between, oh, a Kohen can only do this, a Kohen can do this much, and a Levi does this, or the other way around. A Levi can only go this far, but a Kohen is more of a Levi than a Levi, or a Kohen has additional Kedusha than the Levi. Which means, or I'll say it differently, that the Levi becomes a subtext of a Kohen, or a subgroup of a Kohen, so maybe it's possible that the Bechor was supposed to be this generic God server. Right? That's what you meant.
But before you said that,
So I'm saying, and that would be further support. But I'm saying it's interesting that Rashi over here, and maybe I don't know how hard we want to work to make Rashi consistent, Rashi over here is telling us, and by the way, so you can always answer this. Maybe I'll say the question, then I'll answer it. Rashi's telling us that Moshe is supposed to be the Kohen, and by the way, just a little insight. Moshe is neither firstborn, right? Right. Moshe is not the, okay. He's a Levi, but he's not a firstborn. So therefore, say that Moshe was supposed to be the Kohen is also a strange thing. Now, by the way, was Moshe Kohen? Yes, Moshe was a Kohen at one point, and then he stops being Kohen during the Miluim, during the time that the Mishkan is set up. Moshe functions as Kohen and stops functioning as a Kohen. So if I then ask you the trick question, who was a Kohen temporarily and stops being a Kohen, then you can say the firstborn in Moshe, right? But over here, Rashi seems to be telling us, back in Perek Dalet, all the way by the Sneh, that Moshe is supposed to be Kohen, he's going to be replaced by Aaron. Over here, this discussion is on Kehuna, and look, one of the things that we're not clear about is the definition of a Bechor. Is a Bechor the first male child, or is the Bechor the first child? So you'll tell me, in terms of the laws of Pidyon HaBen, that it has to be the first child. The Pidyon HaBen, it's the first, right, Peterechem, is the first child. Could Aaron somehow have been the firstborn? I think it's a little difficult to say, There are certain laws you can talk about the first male child, but it's very difficult to say. Which means what I'm suggesting is the possibility that maybe Aaron would have had some status as a Bechor and therefore had been considered to be a Kohen, although I can't really defend that. What I'm really getting at is another point. There are those who claim that the process that I spoke of, again, goes like this. First, the firstborn are chosen. Then, we have this thing about Aaron becoming Kohen, but we're not exactly sure about all things about this. And we know that the Levium at some point replaced the Bechor, but there may be a middle step. Okay, the middle step would go like this. First, you have the firstborn. What do they function as? As Kohanim. Where? In Egypt. Where? Unfortunately, by the Eagle. Where else? Possibly by Har Sinai. So we have the Kohanim, we have the firstborn as Kohanim. Then we have the Chet Eagle. What happens by the Chet Eagle? The firstborn lose the right to being Kohanim. All the firstborn? Aaron may not be a firstborn. All the firstborn? Which firstborn should not have lost the right to be Kohanim? From Shevet Levi. Which means, hold it, we're just like missing, maybe you have to, like, it's like math over here, right? If you make the whole chart, you're still left with some people in the middle. Who are they? They're, you know, on your down chart, you know, are the Levium and they're firstborn, but there are people who are Levium and still firstborn. Would they have been disqualified as Kohanim at this point? No. Which means there is a possibility that the flip which will take place is that these people who were Kohanim, who didn't sin, think about that for a second. Those people who were firstborn didn't sin, now they're going to become Levium. By the way, can you give me a name of one of those people? Korach. Korach. Does that give you a little insight into Korach? Korach is saying, what did you do to me? Right? Why are you taking everything and I'm getting left out over here? Because of Korach, and the meaning there may have been, we don't like to analyze things in terms of politics, in terms of ego and so on, even though I don't know how you're going to explain the whole situation of Korach without politics and without ego, but maybe there were some Levium, and I can now point at least one, who felt displaced because he was destined to be a Kohen, right? He has everything going for him. He's saying, hold it, I am a Levi, I am a Kohen. What's going on over here? I'm a Bechor. So why in the world should I have lost those particular rights? Look at source 9. Just, I know you don't like when I say things. It's better if you have some dead rabbi saying it. Look at source number 9. V'korach haya shoel hakehuna mishnei ta'amim, echad shehu levi kamo Aharon, v'od shehaya b'chor, shenemar uvnei yitzar korach. V'lo od elo haya rotze liyot kohen gadol b'makom Aharon. And by the way, you can imagine what he's saying over here. He goes, okay, so let me get this straight, right? We're losing the rights to be firstborn, we're losing the right to be Kohen as a firstborn, despite the fact that I'm a Levi, and we're losing it because we sinned with the golden calf, even though I didn't sin with the golden calf, but Aaron has sinned with the golden calf, he's going to become the Kohen Gadol. Did I get that right? So that's what I've succeeded in doing, Korach is right. Okay? That was the one weakness in Korach's argument, is that, you know, God does have the right to choose who he wants as the people serving him. But still, let's just go back one more time and then we'll try to go further. There is a possibility that the Kohanim were chosen just for Egypt, and they were not supposed to be the ongoing Kohanim. And I'm saying specifically in Egypt, there may have been a necessity for the process of liberating the concept of the firstborn from the Egyptian understanding of firstborn and bringing into a kedusha aspect of firstborn, and therefore it's important for the firstborn, instead of having served pagan gods, now they will serve God and they will do the Korban Pesach. Of course, when they revert back to serving pagan gods, so at that point it didn't work, and they will then be displaced. Once the firstborn is displaced, it's all firstborn are displaced, and as I can say, they serve their purpose. What needed to happen happened. It's part of the process of leaving Egypt. It's the flip side of Makat Bechorot. By the way, you can also imagine how that would have been considered a Makah. I'm not talking about killing the firstborn. I'm saying the fact that the firstborn are serving God and not serving whatever pagan deities they may have. So that's part of Makat Bechorot. That's part of leaving Egypt. And once we're out of Egypt, that's not necessary, even though the Roshem of the Kedusha, I'm just flipping the terms now, remains with them by virtue of the fact that they weren't killed. So therefore the Kedusha remains in the firstborn. But it's also very interesting that we're told, again, the words of Rashi, there's a Tmura taking place. Truma means a transference of Kedusha, which means the Kedusha that the Levium will get will be the Kedusha that once belonged to the Kohen. Now, there's another approach to this, or at least one more, maybe two more. I'll mention one briefly, and then I'll get to the other one. There is, in the Targum Yonatan, which I think I put someplace here, which I may not have. Where is it? There it is, number 19. 19 is the English for the Keter Yonatan. And I've mentioned this before also in passing, and I'm just going to say it again quickly in passing. But you know what, before I read this, I just want to finish off the last thought. When Moshe is displaced, why is Moshe displaced? When Moshe is displaced as Kohen, why is he displaced? So in Source 16, the Maharal says, "V'yesh lomer de'im hayita holech b'shlichut b'ratzon." If you would have, what's God saying? I want you to be my shaliach. I want you to be my emissary. Right? If you would have done this willfully, nirashata muchan l'shlichut el Yisrael. V'ru'i ayta liot kohen gam kein. Because what is a kohen? It's somebody who serves as a shaliach for Am Yisrael. You're not willing to be a shaliach. So he says, therefore, ki a kohen shaliach Yisrael avim shebishamayim, aval ata she'ein ata holech miratzon, ein ata ru'i l'kohen. That you're not willing to willfully accept your job as an emissary, so you can't be. That means you just, it's not a punishment as much as the Maharal saying, is you've shown that you're disqualified for this. What's also interesting is that the heart needs to be whole. When the Kohen makes the bracha, when he blesses the people, what bracha does he say? Right, which means the ahava has to be there. And if you go back to Rashi in source, it says, look at 14 first, then we'll go to 15. It says, V'halo Aaron Achicha HaLevi, right? Yadati Kitabari Daberhu, V'gam Hunehu Yotzei L'Kratecha, V'ra'acha V'samach B'libo. God has to add in that he's happy also. So Rashi here adds in Source 15, V'ra'acha V'samach B'libo, he's happy in his heart. Lo k'shata savor shiyeh makpid alecha, it's not that Aaron, as the older brother, will be jealous like all the characters in Bereshit of his younger brother who has surpassed him in terms of his spiritual capabilities, but rather he's happy in his heart. What does Rashi continue and say? Misham zacha Aaron la'adei ha'choshen ha'natun alev. That's why he got the choshen, which is one of the things that the Kohen Gadol will wear, which goes on the heart. Why? Because he's sameach, which means, put this together with the Maharal, why is Aaron the Kohen? Because he's happy about this, and therefore he's happy about the shlichud, he's happy to do this job, and therefore he is a Kohen. Why isn't Moshe a Kohen? Because he doesn't want to accept the job, that means he's not a Kohen. So over here, it sounds like between Rashi and the Maharal, we're not talking about rewards and punishments, rather we're just talking about something which is just revealed in terms of the essence. Correct. But it's not even that they may have known or not known, but they end up in the right job. Right.
The way he was qualified was God made him be qualified by making him
Now the Keter Yonatan, which I told you about, is based upon source 18 in Bereshit, even though that's not what it comments on. Source 18, which is in Bereshit, writes, when Yaakov leaves his home, he has his dream and so on, then he says, Va'evan azota shesamti matzeva ye beit elokim, which, by the way, has everything to do with building a Mishkan or building a Beit HaMikdash. Yaakov says, I will build a Beit Elokim. V'kol asher titen li aser asrenu lach. And everything that you give me, I will give you a tenth. So, generally, the way to understand this is in terms of monetary gifts that he's going to give. He'll give ma'aser. He'll give of his fortune. When Yaakov comes back to Israel, he's accosted along the way. Vayivater Yaakov lo'ado, vayavek ishimo adolot ha-shachar. A man comes and attacks him until the break of day. Who is this man and why is he attacking him? So obviously there's many, many, many interpretations of this. Source 19, the Targum Yonatan, it's translated in Hebrew here, says, Vayishar Yaakov levado, be'ev le'nahar yovak. Which again, note, Yaakov is now coming back into Israel. V'yavek malach imo kidmut ish. There was a malach who looked like a man. V'yomer. Again, we don't know why he's attacked. He goes, pay up your dues. You made a pledge. Every shul should hire a malach like this. V'yomer. Halo amarti la'asur kol shalcha. You said you were going to give a tenth of everything. V'yesh lecha treser banim ubat echad v'lo isartem. You have 12 sons and one daughter. Actually, at this point, he has 11 sons. You have 12 sons and one daughter, and you haven't given anything yet. Biyad hifrish arba bichorim. Now, this is fascinating. He separates the four firstborn. Why separate the four firstborn? Because by virtue of being firstborn, they're already holy. Again, this is long before we leave Egypt. We didn't even get down to Egypt yet. He separates the first firstborn because he can't count them. He can't give something which you're already being taxed on, right? It's not yours. Unisharu shmone. And therefore he had eight left. Vishana limnot mishimon. So he starts counting from Shimon. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And he goes all the way around, because 12 minus 4 is 8. So he starts by Shimon, goes all the way around, gets to Shimon a second time, and Shimon then is number 9. V'Allah Levi b'ma'asar, and Levi becomes number 10. And Ana Michael. And the angel there who's there at the time is Michael, and he says to God, oh, God, here is your portion. So here you have a remarkable midrash. As far as I know, this is the first reference of any source trying to say why Levi is chosen, and it's a result of Yaakov having made a neder. But if this is the case, then Levi's being chosen as long before the firstborn, even though there is this tension between the firstborn and Levi, even within this text, because the firstborn seems to have their own specialness and Levi seems to have his own specialness. But let me go back to one other source, which we need to get to, especially for this week. No, I want to stress something also. Levi is chosen, well, we're not exactly sure why yet, but it's the whole tribe. When we think about the kahuna, the bracha that the Kohen says, the Rambam we have over here quoting it, whenever Kohen eats holy things, but it's not exclusively over here, but you're just not familiar with this bracha in source 20, V'kol ha'ochel matanah she'esh bo kedusha, whenever Kohen will eat something that has kedusha, mevarech, he'll make a bracha. What will be the special bracha ta'mitzvah that the Kohen will make? Asher kedushanu b'kedushato shel Aharon. You've given me the kedusha of Aharon. But you're familiar with that phrase. But he's saying this is the bracha that a Kohen always says. Asher kedushanu b'kedusha shel Aharon. Therefore, if I just think about that bracha for a second, where does the Kohen's kedusha come from? It's not even by virtue that he's a descendant of Aharon, it's the Kedusha of Aharon, which means it's Aharon's Kedusha that then gets spread out to other people, but it's all about Aharon. Look, what some of the Mefarshim talk about is, what's going on here? That God chooses Aharon, let's say it's after the Chet HaEgel, right? So then it's either way, even if it's before, but he keeps him. God is saying that Aharon is forgiven for the Chet HaEgel. And the Kedusha of Aharon, that means that God is saying that I accept tshuva is possible, and whatever indiscretion he may have done, and that we can debate, or when you get to next week, you can debate among all the various commentaries how severe Aaron's sin would have been. But God is saying, I choose Aaron. But it's not just that I choose Aaron. Aaron is the Kohen. Aaron HaKohen. Anybody who later becomes a Kohen, it's not because he takes Aaron's place. He is in Aaron's place. I don't know if that was clear enough. He is Aaron, because that's what the Kohen is. Every Kohen afterwards is Kedushato Shel Aaron. Which, by the way, makes it sound an exclusively paternal identity. Now, you understand, and you all know, on the other hand, that in terms of Jewish law, to be able to retain the Kedusha of a Kohen, the mother is also significant. So what exactly is the significance of motherness? That meaning, one thing is a Kohen is a higher level of Kedusha in terms of limitations of who the Kohen can marry, but the maternity is also something which is quite significant. So the reason I said I had to talk about maternity this week is because my mother's birthday, and I asked her how old she is, and she won't say. But I know what year you were born. So let's take a look at one. I'm about to show you. Because there's one more source that may be significant. Look at source 22, which is really quite difficult, or at least certainly what the Ibn Ezra will do with it will be difficult. V'yikach Aharon et Elisheva bat Aminadav, achot Nachshon, lo li'isha, v'tedlo et Nadav et Avihu et Elazar v'et Itamar. V'yikach Aharon et Elisheva bat Aminadav, esh Nachshon, achot Nachshon. What's the relationship? I mean, what's the significance over here? Aharon married, what? Aharon marries Elisheva, daughter of Aminadav, the sister of Nachshon. So look at the Ibn Ezra on this verse, source 23. V'yikach Aharon hiskir eshet Aharon ba'avur kavod el azar, v'hiskir achot Nachshon ba'avur sod hakohuna. So over here, there's something going here. This is the sod of the kohuna. The Ibn Ezra will reference this again in source 21, which is where we started today, when it says you should choose Aharon as the Kohen. V'ata hekrev. The Ibn Ezra writes, V'ata ba'avur hayot Moshe Kohen haKohanim b'tchila. Moshe is at first the Kohen. Al ken tam hekrev elecha, that you're going to share there's going to be a transference of the kedusha of kehuna from Moshe to Aharon. V'kfar ramazti lecha lama nivcha Aharon lahakdishu l'shem ba'avur kvod mishpachat Nachshon shiyu kohanim mechaprim abnei Yisrael. And I've already hinted to you that there's some kind of connection with Nachshon. What in the world? Sorry, source 21. So again, he tells us that there's some kind of a connection with Nachshon. So what's the connection? Good, yeah? He's the first one that jumps in, which makes sense. He's like a Bechor almost, but there's something else over here which we are apparently missing. Source 27, Rabbeinu Bechaya writes, V'yikach Aharon et Elisheva, Hodi'anu akatuv hazeh, ki hitarva mishpachat hakehuna im mishpachat hamalchut, hi Elisheva achot Nachshon, hanasi hagadol shabi Yisrael. So that this merger is one really of kingship and of kehuna. Let's take a look at source 28. I guess we'll finish with this for today. Rav Tzadok HaKohen, in a book which is aptly called Yisrael Kedoshim. V'kuhuna hu ha-kedusha she-me-avotenu, me-avotav, kimo kol ze-aron heim ha-kohanim, b'toldah mi-yachas avotam. What is kahuna? Again, Rav Tzadik, a Kohen from Lublin, he likes to write about kahuna. The holiness of kahuna comes from the father. V'af Aaron atzmo zachalo od me'avotav miyocheved imo. And how does Aaron become the Kohen? Because of his mother. What does it mean, because of his mother? What does his mother have to do with anything? She'amru ala pasuk v'yas lahim batim. That what's that referring to? It's talking about the two midwives. The midwives were told they feared God and they didn't listen to Paro, and it says that God made them batim. What does the Midrash say? Bate kehuna and bate malchut. So if this was a little confusing, what he's telling us over here is that when Miriam and when Miriam and Yocheved, right? Miriam and Yocheved, when they're the midwives and the Shifrim Pura, they are given gifts. What gifts were they given? So how do they get to the kahuna? Yeah. Which means that which means that over here, at that point, these two women receive the gifts for the eventual kahuna, which will come out, the eventual malchut, which will come out. Nachshon, being from Yehuda, as Rabbeinu Bechai is telling us, has this link. Therefore, what takes place in this verse is a linkage between those two batim. But what he's telling us over here is that the kahuna goes all the way back, not just which will follow the lineage of Aaron through the males, but what he's telling us is that the source of the kedusha of Aaron as a Kohen actually goes back to his mother. And over here, when the Torah links specifically, let's read the verse again, which he was going on. Here, the source is Rashi in 24. Kihuna ulevia mi yocheved umalchut mi Miriam. Kidit v'mesechet sota. So over here, the linkage of Nachshon is trying to link those various batim. I think that's what the Ibn Ezra is referring to when he's saying that this is the sod of the kuna. But he's also, again, if this is correct what I'm saying, it gives us a whole nother interpretation of where the kuna comes from, which means the kuna of Aaron. And let's try to be very clear to try to conclude for today. There is a concept of kuna which is identified with Aaron. As far as we can tell, it's not identified with anyone else. Yes, there was a thing of the Bechor. The Bechor seemed to have been temporary religious functionaries, which we later on realized were replaced not by Aaron, but they were replaced by the Levium. So it is quite possible, as Marion was trying to say before, that the original Bechor may have seen themselves as Kohen Levi, because there wasn't really a division between the two. Once Aaron becomes selected, and by the way, if you really did want to judge this whole topic in terms of more halachic terms, you would have to track down at which point we're told not just that someone is selected, but at which point we're told that the Zar, the person who is a non-Kohen, can no longer serve. Where that comes in, where that's introduced, is actually a crucial issue, but I'm leaving the more halachic elements of this outside of the discussion. That the Bechor is chosen initially. Why? It seems to be there's a power in the Bechor. The power in the Bechor is taken, is harnessed, is refocused, used instead of the Egyptian model, is being used now towards the service of God. That's going to last as long as they're serving God. Once the Bechor stops serving God, they will now be replaced. They're going to keep a certain level of Kedusha, which will require them to be for them, for the pidyon, how do you say pidyon in English? For the redemption of the firstborn. The pidyon haben will now be there because there is still Kedusha, and you can't just lose the Kedusha completely. The Kedusha is there, but they can't serve God. Why can't they serve God? Because they served idols. Once they served idols, that's gone. As I said, a problem still may exist between those Leviim who were firstborn, because why should they have been replaced? And now we realize that that's really a very good introduction to the whole story of Korach, because there seems to be something which is really not that fair, which Korach correctly points out. You know, why am I being displaced? But on the other hand, what have we now seen? We've seen that there's this other thing about Levi which goes far back before. We find the Targum Yonatan trying to connect it already to Yaakov making a declaration he's going to give something, and that seems to be all of Shevet Levi. We see on the other hand that this particular family, starting with Moshe's mother, Moshe's sister, they did something heroic which is part of the whole Ge'ulah of Egypt, and therefore they need to be paid back, and therefore part of, again, what we think we understand from the Rebbeinu Bachaye, what we think we understand the Ibn Ezra, what we saw in the Rebbeinu Bachaye, seems to be that the secret of the Kedusha of Aharon actually goes back to his mother, because of what she did is why he ends up becoming Kohen, which means if she is willing to self-sacrifice in order to try to save all of Klal Yisrael, which is really what she's doing over there, so then what better reward than to become the Kohen, especially the Kohen Gadol, especially Aaron, who even by the Eagle, if he is willing to do something wrong, he's willing to self-sacrifice in order to save all of Klal Yisrael, and therefore Aaron's sin by the Eagle may not necessarily be something, again, ironically, which will disqualify him, but ultimately it could be something which even further solidifies his position as Kohen, because he is willing to sacrifice himself in order to try to save Klal Yisrael, even though we can, again, there's certainly room to evaluate how this takes place. Yeah.
I think what Yocheved did that relates to the Kohuna isn't just the self-sacrifice for B'nai Yisrael, but is recognizing, although recognize what God's will was in this world, mm-hmm. You know, and they were willing to do, they said, our mission is with Sharei Kotah. I mean, they knew what...
So that is a Kohen again. That is a Kohen. Correct.
Okay.
Right. Very nice. But as I said, what we see over here, the Ibn Ezra, that the source of the Kohuna goes back to his mother. Okay. Shabbat Shalom. Happy birthday.